1290. Stay tuned.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duvernay, your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets. And at Montecito's Upper Village. At Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How are you today?
Well, I'm a little concerned because our guest is from New York. And I'm
afraid. And I'm surrounded.
And I'm afraid I'm going to listen to him and get my accent back.
Well, our guest today is Zach Siegel. He's the Vice President for Wealth Management and an Insurance Strategist at American Business. Zach, thanks so much for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So try not to use your New York accent because I'm very sensitive.
It was funny. I have to share this. So Zach walks in, meets Neil, and goes, "Oh, so you're from New York." I'm like, "No, how did you know that?" He's from Santa Barbara, born and bred.
Well, actually, this discussion leads right into our first article.
We're going to take a break from our usual format today. We're going to turn the tables a little, Neil, for the first segment and switch it up a little bit.
Uh-oh.
He looks shocked because I didn't give him any warning, but Neil is very modest. And so nobody out there knows that this Saturday you are being honored as the Channel Islands State University Man of the Year, which is a huge honor. It's a fantastic honor meant to shine a spotlight on Neil's many accomplishments. So why don't you share with us, Neil, about some of your accomplishments?
Well, I don't have any.
I knew you were going to say that.
But
I'm prepared.
What I'd like to do now is I have a 7-minute speech. Would you mind
you
if I?
Preview it?
I'd like to try it out here to see if it works.
Well, you can do that, but we don't want to lose people in
sleep. Right. Well, thank you, and it's very nice of them.
So I have a couple questions in all seriousness
for
you. So what exactly is the Man of the Year?
It's based on looks.
I wasn't prepared for that one.
Which is about time.
Well, everyone does tell you do have a face for radio, right?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The way I got involved with CSUCI is I heard the president, Erica Beck, speak, and I felt that Santa Barbara was underappreciating or not appreciating at all what they do for our community, because most people in this community think of CSUCI as a southern school, not part of Santa Barbara. And it really is an important part of Santa Barbara. The nursing program's up here, the MBA program's up here, the psychology program's up here. And many of our kids from City College and from North County go to the school on the main campus. So I felt it was important to make people here in this town aware of how much of an asset CSUCI is to our community.
And in all seriousness, you have done a fabulous job at really, you know, evangelizing the school, because so many of us up in Santa Barbara really do stay in our bubble of Santa Barbara and don't really get down south. And I think you have done a good job at raising awareness, which is oh so needed, especially at this time where, you know, UCSB is becoming more and more difficult to get into. And a lot of our students from Santa Barbara are going to be looking to Channel Islands as their option.
And one of the things that's interesting is, speaking of UCSB, UCSB is a Tier 1 teaching institution, which is really a very amazing, good thing. But CSUCI basically looks at teaching as the most important part of a teacher's responsibilities, not writing or doing research. And so the kids are getting 20 person in a class instruction as opposed to 200 or 250 in a class taught by a teaching assistant. So I don't want to knock UCSB. It's a world-class institution. But it's
we've changed the name, remember? We had this conversation, and we've changed it to Cal State Channel Islands, right?
We did, but nobody
– it's not catching on yet, but it will.
I made that suggestion, and it was met with an incredible silence. So they do take some suggestions, but that one didn't work.
That didn't fly. So now how long is this Man of the Year title? How long do you hold it for?
This is amazing. It's for the entire evening.
Oh, no. I bet it's a one-year term.
It's
at least.
One-year term. It's like Miss America. You get to go and talk and wear great outfits and... No, I have no idea.
Does it come with a sash?
It comes with a sash.
And a tiara.
Yeah, right.
So now, besides PR, what did you do to earn this title? And don't be modest.
I gave money. No. What I did is I became, and it was not difficult, I became a spokesperson. And I went to, which was the first time ever I flew Southwest, and the first time ever I've been in Sacramento. I actually lobbied for CSUCI, which was really an experience, to go up to our seat of our government and actually talk to legislators about, you know, how important it is to fund the whole CSU system. So I think one of the things that I've done is I've tried to be an advocate for Santa Barbara, for our legislatures, and whenever I can, I talk to the kids. I will help to mentor them and talk to them and basically make myself available wherever I can be helpful.
So what was that first, what ignited your passion for CI? And like, what made you even, how did you learn about it and what made you want to get more involved?
Well, somebody who was on the board asked if they could borrow my house 3 years ago to do a fundraiser. And I didn't have to do anything. I just had to lend my house. So I was leaning against a pillar in my house listening to President Beck talk. And I was floored. I could not believe what an incredible story it was in terms of price, in terms of focus on students, their mentorship program where they mentor first-generation kids, the Santa Rosa Island experience where they have a collaborative system of teaching kids about the environment while using the island as a laboratory.
What programs actually do go out to
What's amazing is it's not just the environmentalists and the science students last year, because collaboration is such an important part of USCI, as we say.
CI. Channel Islands. Right. Cal State Channel Islands.
Right. Is that they have basically fostered an environment where departments work together. So last year there was a science study of bats, because believe it or not, Santa Rosa Island has a huge number of different species of bats. So they were doing a study, and they needed to do statistical analysis. So rather than, you know, work on the statistics by having the science students work on statistics, they actually had the science department, the math department, go over to the islands. So the math kids work with the science kids, and so the science kids saw how math is used in real world problems, and the math kids saw how the intuitive kind of work that mathematics provides actually helps all kinds of other areas of study.
What other programs does Cal State Channel Islands utilize that's different from other Cal States or say the UC system here in California?
Well, the big thing that it does is it really works to have professors do whatever they think is cutting edge, to work with other departments. Collaboration is very important. To help first-generation kids, 70% of the kids who go there are first-generation. They may not even know what the word matriculation means. So they try to basically help the student not just register, but help the student graduate. And the graduation rates are astounding. The price is very cheap. And
so in order for them to get those graduation rates, they do offer some mentoring programs. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the mentorship program that actually is my favorite program that they have. They take upper class people and they give them a stipend equal to 1 year's tuition and books. And
so the stipend includes the tuition and books?
Yep. And they then teach them how to mentor freshmen. And each mentor, once they're trained, gets 10 to 12 mentees. So the last semester, 400 mentors work with 436 mentees, and they help in helping those kids get through what's a real mystery. You know, you and I'm sure, had a lot of help when we were freshmen in college. You know, we come from families that looked at college as part of the normal course of coming of age. Most of these kids are the first generation to go to school, so they don't really understand what it is that has to happen. And so the mentors get the benefit of not having to pay tuition, not having to work off campus. At the same time, they're helping these underclassmen get through school. And at the same time, they're learning about empathy and leadership. Then the mentees become mentors. So it's sort of a circle that really helps everybody. And, you know, the thing that drives me nuts about conservatives in our system is the whole notion I did it on my own. And I certainly didn't do it on my own. I had a whole team of therapists and tutors and parents and family helping me. A lot of these kids have nobody. And
right.
So the whole idea of having teachers who care and having mentors who are there to help you, you know, is really the difference between success and failure.
So for all those listeners out there aspiring to be acknowledged in such a way as the Man of the Year, what tips do you have for them?
Well, the first and most important thing is to have two radio shows on AM 1290 KZSB because that is really the answer.
So now, do you think this honor has actually gone to your head, or should we call your wife and ask her that question?
Why don't we wait until the speech is finished to see how it's...
So next Monday, we'll get an update on how it went.
Review.
All right.
Well, thank you so much for interviewing me. This was really interesting hearing me.
And you know, I have to say, I felt a little bad about breaking it up because you were so excited about some of these articles that I had never seen you that excited about before.
By the way,
so we'll do them next week.
I want to just tease this article because we're going to do it next week. This is an article that says, and you're going
to
appreciate this also, our guest,
is
that the new thing in financial advisors is to have a therapist on staff or to have the financial advisor be somewhat attuned to psychological issues because so many clients really need psychological help, not just financial help. On that note, you're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Hey y'all, Jeff Foxworthy here. Now, if you've ever found yourself repeating the same thing over and over for 75 years, you might be Smokey Bear.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
That's why I'm filling in for Smokey to switch things up, because there's a lot more to say. And I should know because my grandfather was a firefighter. And one of the things he taught me is that the people that love the outdoors the most are often the ones accidentally starting wildfires, which means always BYOB. No, bring your own bucket to the campfire. And be extra careful with things like burning yard trimmings. Don't just walk away, or chances are you might be starting a wildfire. So for the love of the outdoors, go to SmokeyBear.com to learn more about wildfire prevention. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 805-564-1290.
Or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. If you're just joining us, we have the pleasure of having Zach Siegel, who is a vice president of wealth management and an insurance specialist at American Business. And prior to joining American Business, Zach was responsible for the private client planning with UBS Financial. And he's also a certified financial planner. And he is all around a great guy. So thanks so much for being here, Zach.
That's what my resume says.
Yeah.
It's much shorter than it
used
to.
Well, you know, it was getting lengthy. So tell us a little bit about yourself. We already know you're from New York.
It's true.
So how did you get into insurance? And tell us, you know, where you came from, where you went to school.
Yep. I feel like it was destiny. I grew up in Connecticut.
I just have to pause there for a minute because I don't think I've ever heard anybody in insurance say it was destiny.
It's true. Well, with the last name Siegel and growing up in Connecticut, which is like the insurance capital of the world, as much as I tried to avoid it for many years, eventually it found me. So I started at UBS and got to know, just by doing financial planning for people, got to know the importance of insurance and started working at our firm, American Business, back in 2003. So it's been a long time now. And now I get to help other advisors kind of do the same sort of planning for their clients, which is really fun and interesting to me.
Now, so where did you go to school?
I went to school in Connecticut and did my CFP through Boston College. So we have a little Boston in common. And after working at UBS, we finally decided after starting our family and our daughter was born in New York, we were ready to get out of the big city. And my wife is from California, so this was where we wanted to be. So Santa Barbara.
So you joined American Business when you were back east, and then you were able to transfer out to California.
Yep.
Can you tell us about America? What is American Business?
American Business is an insurance planning boutique. So we specialize really in life insurance as it relates to things like estate planning, business succession planning, that kind of stuff. It's been around for 52 years, and so I've been there for the last 16 of those years. There's a handful.
It's been around almost as long as a little bit longer than you've been married.
Oh, you just trying to give away my age?
No, but yeah.
Well, I got married at 5 years old. It was in New York exactly. In those days. We had arranged marriages. Yes.
You look good.
Childhood arranged marriages work, right? Sorry, Neil. I didn't mean to insult you. Why is age an insult? It just is.
I'm very sensitive.
I know.
For the man of the year, this is...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So now, Zach, you also do... you work primarily now in your role at American Business, working with other financial professionals, helping them see the need or the products that are available in mm-hmm. the lineup. So tell us a little bit with the estate planning rules that have, you know, the levels and limits have gone up to mm-hmm. the, you know, $11, $12 million per person for the estate. How often are you using insurance products to help solve for those types of items?
That's a great question because two things have happened. Number one, the estate limits have gone up significantly. We're at really an unprecedented level of exemption. So people that before, I remember, you know.
Well, it was $675 for the longest time
until
probably 2000.
2000? Yeah, literally.
I feel like it was even longer than that.
So, yeah, it's crept up as time has gone on. But there was a period of time where anyone really with a business or a home or some savings, they were going to be subject to estate taxes. And so now as those exemptions have gone up, the other thing that's happened is wealth creation over the same period of time. So you have – there are fewer people that are being affected by the tax, but those that have had success in business and other things, that group has gotten much, much larger. So regular people are not as affected by this anymore, but then there's a much larger group that that have significant wealth that really are planning.
And does your company, does it do wholesale work or retail? That is, do you speak to clients individually or are you speaking to financial planners?
It's both. So sometimes clients will find their way to me either, you know, through experience or referrals or things like that. But I would say more than 90% of my work comes in collaboration with other advisors. So most of the time I will deal directly with the clients, but it's always in concert with their advisory team. Most often the financial advisor is the one that leads that conversation.
So you're not in competition with financial planners?
No, it's actually a really good partnership.
And the company that you work with, that you are part of, is it a broker, or does it create its own product?
It does not create its own product. We act as a broker, and we're an independent general agency, so we have no sort of special requirement to sell one insurance company over another. I think it's just the right way to do things, number one, but also as a CFP, we have a fiduciary standard that we approach everything with, and so having that independence allows us to see the whole market, to see every insurance company's pricing. And software makes that a really kind of level playing field.
So let me throw you a softball question. Do insurance salespeople have CFPs typically?
I think it's unusual.
Okay, so therefore, most insurance brokers are not subject to the fiduciary rule.
That's a fair point.
Okay. You're welcome for this.
For me, I always had a fascination with financial planning. As a kid, it was something that was like a world of mystery to me. You know, back at that point, you would see the stock prices in the paper. And I would think, what is this? And I knew there was something incredibly powerful and important about it, but it was really foreign to me. So it was something that I had a real interest in. And fortunately, I had gotten the mentorship early in my life for somebody to say, if you're serious about this, you know, start working on your CFP certification. And that kind of set me down this path.
And so walk us through a typical case. So someone like myself, I would identify a client that's in need of some insurance products to help them avoid paying estate tax, and or if they are owners of large of properties worth a lot of money, how would you come in, explain how you come in and what you would do? Walk us through one of your typical cases that you deal with.
Sure. So I'm thinking of a situation that we're helping a family with now, where there are significant real estate holdings, mm-hmm. and these are legacy real estate holdings for their family. So they inherited them from the generation above them, and they hope to do the same with the assets for their kids and grandkids as well. But because real estate is relatively illiquid, they don't want to sell it, and they don't want to create debt. One of the things that we're looking at for them is creating an insurance trust. We're working with their estate planning attorney and with their financial advisors to identify what we think is a reasonable amount of coverage to meet the current need. And then we're also in a situation now where the law as it stands, we know is going to sunset after December 31st of 2025. And who knows what it's going to look like after that. So we're trying to build in enough flexibility with this stuff to create insurance policies that can be there to help pay the taxes so that they can keep the family assets intact without having to sell things, you know, for the sake of funding.
So explain an ILET to our listeners who many, I'm sure, haven't heard of that before.
Sure. So an ILET is an abbreviation, ILIT, which stands for an irrevocable or unchangeable life insurance trust. The trust is something where you can have assets that are held in it, like an insurance policy or like investments or real estate or anything like that. But because an insurance policy is never alive, right, because the trust is never alive, the other side of that coin is the trust
can't
will
be
also
insured.
Never die, right? So you've got assets that you can move into a trust. And then the idea is to have an insurance policy owned inside of that trust, which would be outside of your estate. So when estate taxes come due, typically after both parties of a married couple are deceased, that's when you want to have that insurance be paid to the trust. The trust would receive those monies tax-free. And then because they're outside of the estate, they would also be beyond the reach of estate taxes. So for people that have, at least right now, assets of, let's say, more than $22, $23 million as a family, that's usually where we start to look at those techniques because we're trying to build assets beyond the reach of estate tax.
And so with that, talk through, so the life insurance assets get paid into that trust that's irrevocable. And then does that trust pay the estate tax?
That's one of the ways to use it, yeah. So let's use an example. Let's say somebody is worth, we'll make the math easy, otherwise I'll get confused as we go along. But let's just say somebody's worth $32 million. So right now we're going to pretend that their exemption is $23 million. Let's call it 22 million.
I thought you were trying to do for easy math here, Zach.
So let's say they've got $10 million above the exemption amount. Right now, the federal tax is a 40% tax on that, on any amount above the exemption. So if they've got $10 million of exposure and they've got 40%, that means they've got potentially a $4 million tax bill that would be due at the second death. So the choices are, well, do nothing, and then the kids will just have to sell something off to fund it. But we find that it's much more efficient and cost-effective for them to just buy a $4 million life insurance policy that would help to do that. So the trust would own the policy. It would be outside of the estate. And then when that $4 million tax bill came due, you'd have the $4 million in life insurance that could pay for it, and it would keep all of the $32 million of the estate intact.
And is this a term policy? So if, in fact, the law doesn't sunset, if you don't need the money you just stop paying the premium. So there's no real asset there other than the insurance part of it.
So the short answer with all this is it depends, uh-huh. Right? So in some cases where people are worth, you know, 60, 80, 100 plus million dollars, they feel that they're always sort of going to be a target of estate tax. Or they may just like the efficiency that the life insurance creates. They may say, well, I want to use the type of contract that would have some cash value so that if they get down the road and things have changed, the policy cash value would give them kind of an exit strategy so it wasn't just a lost.
I've actually never seen it funded with just term insurance because usually you're talking about individuals that are older and they're putting this in place maybe 20, 30 years before they're anticipating, you know, dying. And therefore, because you don't know when that end date is on someone's life, that they get that whole life policy because their health may deteriorate over time and then the premiums really, really go up. But I don't know. I'm not the insurance specialist. is that what you typically see as well? Is more
we're seeing
of a, whole
a combination
life
right
universal?
Now because of these things. Because my feeling is, we don't want to overcommit to these strategies. We're dealing with uncertainty on a lot of levels. Mm-hmm. And so to have something where I'm thinking of one client where we've been able to identify for them in Washington State, they actually have a state estate tax on top of the federal estate tax. So they know, for example, they've got a couple million dollars, I think $3 million of exposure now. But then as the advisor built out sort of a modest projection about what their estate could look like, and you look at the change after 2025, they're going, we think we need $3 million now, but we might need like $15 million. And so they want to build in the amount that they feel they can kind of get their arms around now, but also build in some flexibility. So they're using a combination of permanent and term. The term is kind of like a what if.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. And we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
Are you ready to start and run your own successful business? Ready to grow your small business or home business? Women's Economic Ventures is a local nonprofit helping women start and build successful businesses. In addition to their highly successful self-employment training program, Weave offers services to help women succeed at every stage of their business, from startup and launch to building and sustaining a business, including individual business counseling, professional networking events, advanced business training, and small business loans to start or expand a business. Over 1,000 local businesses are now owned and operated by women who have taken part in programs and services. Whether you're ready to start up, launch, build, or sustain your business, Women's Economic Ventures is right here to help you make it happen. Call 965-6073 or visit weaveonline.org.
Hey everybody, Rachel Ray here. Nothing brings a bigger smile to my face than cooking up a big meal for the whole family and lots of friends. But there's not enough room at my table for the 17 million kids in our country who struggle with hunger. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food to give hope to hungry kids. But they can't do it without your help. Support Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you're just joining us, we have Zach Siegel, who is an insurance strategist at American Business. And so we were talking before the break about estate planning tax, or estate tax planning, I guess, is the better way to put it. And so you were talking about the fact that the state of Washington actually has a state-level estate tax.
It's true. Washington, Oregon, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, there may be a few others too, but it's a whole other level of planning that people that live in those states have to deal with.
Wow, and California doesn't. I think this is the only tax California doesn't have that another state has.
Not yet.
Yeah, exactly. Not yet. Exactly. So if you see if California does go along the same line as New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, Washington, and whatever other states have a state tax at the state level, what do you see happening? You know, do you actually see this being a reality? Do you follow the legislative?
I would have a hard time seeing it get much traction now, but I really don't know. But what I do see is clients that live in those states, and we've seen it here in California, where people are changing residence to Nevada, even from a state income tax standpoint, or everybody from New York who moves to Florida. We've okay. seen one recently with a company relocating from New York. They're considering a move to Puerto Rico. So not only from a state income tax standpoint, but from their overall federal rate would be lower too. So I think as we've seen these things shift, almost like the way estate tax planning used to be an issue for everybody, now the real issue is becoming this income tax management strategy.
And there's no insurance to get around that one. Not yet, right?
Not yet.
So let's switch gears a little bit and start talking about long-term care insurance. It's a hot topic as you have a lot of the baby boomers that are in that sandwich generation of taking care of their parents and raising their kids. And they see what their parents are going through in terms of the cost of care as we age as a population. What's going on in that insurance space at this time?
We're getting more and more questions about this, especially from people that attempted to buy this insurance in the past. Many purchased it through Genworth, which was the right company to buy it from for a really long time. And only within the last couple of years, as they have really hit major headwinds from interest rates staying so low, they can't earn enough on their own portfolio, and then an increase in claims, it's affected their credit rating really severely, to the point where we don't know what's going to happen. And they were the big fish. So what happens when the big fish, is in trouble? So what we're seeing is people, instead of using the solutions that they used to, we're seeing more and more of an interest in benefits that are linked, where they're hybrid solutions, where it's incorporating some element of life insurance along with long-term care. The advantages to that are that there's more certainty, there's guarantees, as opposed to kind of traditional long-term care where the price could go up over time, like health insurance. And the other thing that we're seeing is that people, they really want to know that if they're committing to an insurance strategy, if they don't need long-term care, and who wants to think that they're gonna, they want to know that there's some value there for the next generation. So it's not just lost to the sands of, you know, insurance cost.
It's interesting because when I talk to people about that those hybrid type models of long-term care and life insurance, I usually describe it as really bad life insurance. Mm-hmm. And then you have this protection of long-term care if you should need it. As many people hope that they don't, you know, hope that they just don't wake up one day if that's the way it goes. So at least it's not all lost, like you were saying. So as we see Genoworth's ratings slip, are they at risk of not performing on their contracts?
I feel like this is unprecedented, what we're seeing with them play out in slow motion. It's one of these situations where we could not recommend clients buy the insurance from them today. But at the same time, we can't duplicate what they have because the contracts were so underpriced for so long.
Right.
So clients are getting notices where in some cases the cost of coverage is going from $2,000 a year to $5,000 a year or from $5,000 to $15,000.
Which is truly cost prohibitive for most people to have that type of jump in an insurance product, which basically you look to insurance to
offset risk.
Right. For the risk that you can't afford or self-insure for. And that just seems like that's going to cause a lot of these policies to cancel because they can't come up with that type of money to pay for this insurance.
Yeah, they may lapse the coverage, which in a weird way is good for Genworth because then they've gotten the money and they haven't had to pay out the claims. But we just don't know what to expect here. They're trying to raise capital by doing a sale to a Chinese investment fund. And with regulatory oversight, we don't know if that's going to happen or not.
Now, Zach, can you explain to us about, you know, you had mentioned interest rates were low for so long. And many people don't understand really how an insurance company works and how they're able to provide benefits based on the premiums that people pay. And you alluded to it, the fact that interest rates and how kind of the insurance company stays solvent.
Mm-hmm. So I won't pretend to know exactly how this works, but the way that I think of it is they're collecting the premiums from the policyholders, and those dollars are invested usually conservatively with bonds, treasury bonds, municipal bonds, corporate bonds. But because the interest rate environment has stayed low for so long, far longer than anybody ever thought it would.
Ever thought that
these,
it would, yeah.
These companies, they're experiencing the same problems that pension plans have experienced, where they thought, hey, we can earn worse. It's reasonable to conclude you could earn 5 or 6% on a bond portfolio. But while that may have been true, you know, in 1998, 1999, looking backward, ever since rates started to be cut after the early 2000s, we're seeing companies just – they can't sustain it, and they may be earning only 2 or 3% on the bonds that they're buying now. So they have to offset that by charging more.
One of the things that's a catch-22 is that people who can afford the high premiums probably technically don't need these types of insurance policies unless they want to give money to their kids at a higher number. Because if someone's worth $10 million and if, you know, care for Alzheimer's is $300,000 a year, they can afford the $300,000 a year. So people who can't afford that are the people that probably can't afford the premium.
It's true.
It's sort of, you know, kind of ironic that it's a lifesaver if you could afford it.
Yeah. The only thing that I could share that could help to put this in perspective is as these premium increases are coming, what it should remind people is that they were undercharging up until now. So it's a
nice positive spin.
It's a painful experience, but the reality is if they had been charging more previously, then maybe the situation would be different now. So it's a reminder that they were not paying enough for
right.
a long period of
you're,
time.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Yeah.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Sweet strawberry icing. You were strolling along in goodwill when just past that mid-century side table and denim jacket you spotted them, nestled in their display case. Miniature donut earrings. Oh, yes! Yes! Your favorite half-breakfast pastry, half-all-day dessert food, made into your favorite form of ear candy. Oh, my. Those bejeweled sprinkles have satisfied some unknown hunger within you. Shh, do you smell that? That's the sugary scent of shopping success. For this is Goodwill. And with every item you buy, you fund local job training and more. So go forth. Bring home those donut earrings. And bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks could only dream about.
And if you're just joining us, we have Zach Siegel, who's with American Business, who works as an insurance specialist and vice president of wealth management. So really what your job is to help bring ideas and help their already existing team of planners, whether it be estate planning or financial planners, to implement solutions to people's potential estate planning problems.
I think that's a great way to look at it. Yeah. For me to work within a team like that is the best way to do this, because you know that feeling as a consumer, like if you've ever had to get something done at the house and you need a plumber. And so you talk to one plumber and he's got one idea, and then you talk to another plumber and he goes, well, that other plumber's an idiot. I know the right way to do this. It's the most frustrating thing in the world, because now you have to become an expert of the experts. So working in close collaboration with the financial advisor, with the attorney, with the tax professionals, everybody is working on the same problem together. And then the solution that comes out of that is going to be the best one, because everybody's going to have their input and insight.
So if someone's out there listening right now and thinking, ooh, I should get some life insurance, what advice do you have for them and of where they should start and how they should go about solving their problem?
I would go to the people that they're already working with first, and maybe if they have a financial advisor that they rely on, and see, because that person is really going to probably have the most insight into their situation. Even if a friend or a client approaches me, I want to know who else is helping them, because I want this to be a team approach. So I think that's an important thing. Just see the people that are already helping them. Do they have a relationship that's a good one that could help? But as a consumer in the process, I think you want to make sure that whoever you're dealing with can really see the whole market, as opposed to just representing one insurance company as an agent.
I think that's great advice, because oftentimes people seek counsel from people who have one solution to sell, and that's the one that is the best for that person that they're talking to. And I think having the advantage of sitting back and seeing all the pricing across the industry helps you be a better advisor. So what anomalies do you see out there in the insurance industry right now? Is there anything that you would recommend people look at today, because something is going to change in the future?
We are seeing a real shift that's taking place right now. Every insurance every life insurance contract has to be repriced to show the 2017 census tables.
So wait, what does that mean?
So insurance companies and their actuaries price their insurance contracts based on people's life expectancy. And a large part of the way that they get that data is through the U.S. Census. So whenever there is a census that comes out after a certain period of time where they've gotten the data, then life insurance companies will reprice. Historically, that has been a good thing for consumers because the cost has gone down as people live longer. This year is a little bit unique. So they're making a change to the 2017 census, which was the last one. And all of these things have to be repriced for January 1st, 2020. So we've got, you know, what, 3 months left? The other thing that's happening simultaneous to that is insurance companies have new reserve requirements. Mm. And because of the other factors we've talked about, those reserve requirements are significantly higher. So the guidance that we've been getting from these insurance companies is that the prices will go up instead of down. The prices as of January will go up anywhere from 5 to 20%. And we've already seen companies that are repricing now kind of getting ahead of it. So even a client we're working on this morning, we, as of 2-3 weeks ago, had access to one set of pricing. And then they came out and said, okay, here's the new ones, and you can't have the old one anymore. And guess what? The new one's a lot more expensive.
So I think what our listeners should take away from this is if you're thinking about getting life insurance, or if you need to get life insurance and you've been putting it off, which is a much more likely sure. scenario because you're waiting to lose 5 pounds or you're waiting to
or
get into Ultra
alive.
Shake or Shape you or, you know, it. Whatever yeah. that is. You're waiting to, you know, quit your risky behaviors that you're mm-hmm. doing, skydiving, whatever. Now is the better time to do it because you're facing, as of January 1st, rates going up anywhere from 5 to 20%.
I think that's a real way to look at it, yeah. And if you think you're going to need insurance after the beginning of the year, you might as well do it now and be able to get access to more favorable pricing.
That's perfect.
So most of the conversation was dealing with long-term care and basically specialized insurance, but you also do whole life and term life and basically vanilla insurance.
Yes.
And is that something that, you know, so many, and I'll see if I can pronounce this correctly, the millennials.
Oh, you did it. That's the first time in 3 years that I've heard you say that correctly.
Right. Seem to be rejecting everything. Do they tend to buy life insurance?
Oh, that's a good question.
That is a good question. The ones that are working with financial advisors, I think, do see the value in that. And I think because that's kind of the world I live in, those ones do. Apart from that, I think it's life events that make people start thinking about that. You know, if they get married, they have a kid, that is really when those kind of grown-up decisions start to become front of mind. But I think they are open to advice. Especially if they've started to have success, you know, especially here in Santa Barbara, you have a tech industry that's growing. You have people that are successful in business. I think those people start to look for advice.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity. opportunity.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank. Smart banking for smart people.
It is with heavy hearts that Unity Shop Management has had to close its doors to low-income families and the elderly at 1401 Chapala Street. 15 staff members have been laid off and families are being turned away for the first time in 100 years. Our goal is to bring our employees back so we can help 4,000 households between October and December. We need the help of our community. Go to unityshop.org or send your check to Unity at 1209 State Street, 93101. Thank you.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And we're talking with Zach Siegel about insurance today, which he was destined. Destiny brought him to insurance, which I always love. I'm gonna use that time and time again every time I see you now. So for those people out there listening that have insurance, so they might have a term policy or a permanent policy, how do they know if they should reevaluate it? Who should they talk to? Is that something that they should call you about? What if they're concerned if they don't know if they have Genworth and they're concerned about either that insurance company or another one whose ratings have slid? What should they do?
We do a lot of review work for clients, and inevitably there are surprises that get revealed as a result of that process. Sometimes people are buying insurance because of an event. You know, they had a kid, they got married, they sold a business, bought a business, something happened, and then they kind of forgot about it for a while. So it's good to have those things reviewed. Usually if they're being helped by a financial advisor, that may be something that they do just out of routine every few years, they're reviewing that. But if not, we do a lot of that review work for clients. And the best policy in many cases is the policy that they already have. But in other cases, we've found things like they were a smoker when they took it out and they are no longer a smoker. And as a result of that, their costs could go way, way down.
Now, has the insurance industry caught up? Is there a vaping question now on the insurance contracts?
There is e-cigarette questions. And of course, we deal regularly with questions regarding marijuana use. Mm-hmm. And some companies are more sophisticated in underwriting than others. So it'll depend on the carrier. It'll depend on the type of use and things like that. So that's all what a good insurance broker should be able to navigate for you.
Now, are you seeing for those clients that have an option through their employer for, you know, some multiple of their salary as insurance? Are you seeing that? It used to be that used to be the cheapest, most cost effective way to get just a term policy out there. Are you seeing that still be the case today, or are you seeing that a separate portable policy is actually a better use of the client dollars?
I'm going to answer a different question first, which is if you have access to disability insurance through your company, you should buy that because it tends to be less expensive and mm-hmm. it's often guaranteed to be able to qualify for. The exact opposite is true with regard to life insurance. So usually with life insurance, if you are in at least average health, you will do better purchasing it on the open market. And especially if you are somebody who is in a transition out from a job, if you've been let go or you've quit, we're working on one for a client right now, and the cost to maintain their existing insurance is almost 3 to 4 times what it will be for them to buy it on the open market. So be careful about buying extra life insurance through work. That's usually where you can do better, buying it on the open market.
Thank you so much for being here. It's really hard to make insurance interesting, but you did.
You were awake almost the whole time.
I know.
You had the pleasure of sitting with the man of the year at Cal State Channel Islands.
Right. Thank you. And anyway, thank you so much for being here. Thanks,
it was my
pleasure. Everyone, for listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you next week. Yeah.
It's 3.